Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Discover our 2-to-1 offers at your local Kia dealer. For more, log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Joe at RT.ie is a simple email. Now, listening to Morning Ireland this morning, the Chief Operations Officer with the HSC, Anne O'Connor, very, very sobering interview. The cases of COVID-19 are up 43% in the last week. The highest number of infections are among those aged 19 and under 44, and those aged 0 to 18, which is 26%. The majority of patients requiring admission to hospital are not vaccinated and into ICU. 10% of the adult population who are unvaccinated are driving 50% of admissions into the hospitals. And two-thirds of those who are admitted to ICU are also unvaccinated. Cases are growing. Now, Tom Somerville contacted us. Tom, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. And Tom, begin by reminding us of, or publicly remarking on, the two great people in your life, your brother Patrick and his wife Esther, excuse me, both died within a week of each other this year from COVID. And you want to pay tribute to them to begin.
Yes, yeah. They died on the, my brother died on the 17th of January.
Okay.
And exactly a week later, practically to the minute, his wife
Esther, she passed away, Elsie as she was known.
She passed away, yeah.
Okay. Now, tell me the background, did they know they had COVID, or was it sudden, or what was the time frame?
It was very quick, Joe. Elsie contracted it first. And she was taken to Talla Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And within a couple of days, my brother was diagnosed with it. He was taken to Blanchardstown Hospital.
Okay.
Elsie had Alzheimer's, and she more or less got through the COVID stage, came out the other side, but she'd been... her lungs, her whole system had been badly damaged.
Yeah.
And within about 3 days, my brother took a turn for the worst and died within another 2 or 3 days.
And when is the last conversation you had with your brother Patrick?
Oh, it would have been Christmas morning.
And how was he then?
He was fine, but he was very upset because he knew then that Elsie had gone into hospital and she had COVID.
Oh, God.
And he said to me that if anything happened to her, he wouldn't be long behind her. And as it turned out, he died before her.
So you were talking to him on Christmas Day, and Patrick, he died on the 17th of January.
Yeah.
And were you able to talk to him in that 24-day period?
No, because he had this mask, the oxygen on his head, and he was gasping for breath. He a terrible time with him. He kept trying to pull the mask off and get out of the bed that he wanted to see Elsie. He said he'd be okay. And it just suddenly got so bad that he just died.
Now you were contacted because of there's now, as you hear, the figures are going up. The unvaccinated, yep. The 10% that are unvaccinated, they're the majority of people now are in hospital. I don't know what the chances are of getting them vaccinated, how entrenched they are in not believing that they're unvaccination has any impact on anyone else, which is basically what they believe. They say the line is, it's my choice, my body, but they forget that it's a pandemic and your body can pass on. You can have a broken arm, and that's your hardship. But if you touch someone else, you don't give them a broken arm. With COVID, if you breathe, if you touch, you can pass it on and they can die. That's the difference between it's my body, my choice argument and a pandemic. But you think things are slipping?
Yes, definitely. I noticed over the last couple of months that news reports and that they used to give the daily
death
figures
toll,
for deaths, and they'd stopped doing that. And I think people have let their guard down now, and you can see it even in the shops, as you know, people are. Mm-hmm. Passing in front, you know, masks on or the masks down underneath the nose or whatever like that. But I think because they haven't reported the daily cases, that it hasn't helped. Definitely hasn't helped, because people are getting that little bit more complacent, that they haven't heard that people are dying from this anymore, so they think it's okay to continue their life as it should be, I suppose.
Well, in the last week, 26 people have died from COVID.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's you have to search to find that number. It brings the total death toll in Ireland to 5,306 and 408,000 cases.
Yeah. It's shocking. And it's gone ahead the same way again.
So what do you think of the bank holiday Friday tomorrow week? The big reopening.
Yeah, I don't think it should go ahead, really. It's just too soon, I think. There's so many people, and they're all the younger people who are going into the hospitals now. Not only those, but the older people who have been vaccinated. who are getting the second dose or whatever. You know? It's just too soon, I think.
For example, from Friday, the bank holiday Friday, tomorrow week, everyone will be allowed to go into pubs, restaurants. You won't have to show your vaccination cert or whatever on your phone. There'll be no masks, no social distancing. Well, for example, do you believe that only those who are vaccinated should be allowed to go indoors?
That's a hard one, Joe. Well, the problem is that the unvaccinated go in and they pass it on to somebody else, and this isn't going to go away until everybody is vaccinated. I don't think so, anyway. Especially when you hear the figures going up, like 13, I think it was this morning, they said something about 13 people have died, which hadn't been reported on. I mean, you've got to search for a news bulletin that'll have that figure in it to start with. I don't know, Joe. I don't think they should be allowed to open up and get back to that level of normality yet. Not until everyone's vaccinated.
Okay, Tom, stay with us for the time being. I want to bring Mary in. Mary, good afternoon. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 1850 715 815. Mary.
Hello, Joe.
You want the country to open up tomorrow week?
Oh, yes, I don't have a problem with that. My concern is that for the elderly in our society, that a number of elderly people in nursing homes are in lockdown again and have been in and out of lockdown throughout the summer. And I just wondered, what's the plan with NPHET and the HSE? We're getting no information in the media, no information from anybody, and we cannot access our relatives because there are positive cases within their private nursing homes. And there's no direction for these people, and they're forgotten in society again. So I'm just concerned as to, okay, open up society, all of that, but continue to forget about the elderly. I don't think it's right. And I just wondered if there are other people in the country experiencing what I'm experiencing today. I have an elderly mother in a private nursing home who's now in her fourth week in lockdown again. She needs help with all aspects of self-care. And so for her not to be allowed to see any of us any week at the moment has to be really distressing for her again. We've been through it all of last year, most of this year, as you know. Then we had restricted visiting in a side room for half an hour, supervised almost. And then we got to the point of being allowed into her room. And then it went into lockdown in July. Now back in lockdown for several weeks. And there's no direction from anybody for us. Mm-hmm. And they're not vaccinating these elderly people who are negative as well. You'd be told, no, they can't be vaccinated till the nursing home is a month free of COVID. So it doesn't make any sense.
So how many cases of COVID are in?
I think there are over 30.
But the nursing home, do they do a weekly bulletin, an email to all residents saying we have to be extra careful? We believe it came in again through a member of staff or a visitor or a supplier.
They don't give you that information. No, they don't give you that level of information.
And how are the 24 people in the nursing home?
Well, we wouldn't have access to that either. You know, okay. No. Yeah. So it's just that it is a concern for the number of people and staff and all of that. But it's a concern for us as families as to when we're going to have time with our elderly relatives again and what is going to happen now for the winter. Is this going to be a continuous process for them? And yet society will be fully open and they're not being mentioned. So I just wondered if there are other people in other parts of the country having the same problem.
You
might get some feedback.
Okay, stay with us, Mary. Darren Lawler. Darren, good afternoon.
Hiya, Joe. How are things?
What do you think?
Joe, I just think people are letting the guard down too quick. You're going into the shops. People are standing in your shadow. They're wearing the masks below their nose. Some are not wearing masks at all. And it's coming to the stage where you're a bit nervous now asking people to step back or put on their masks, because there could be many reasons why people can't wear a mask and there could be reasons why they're not wearing a mask. But the fact with COVID is, Joe, COVID is here and it will come to visit any of us unexpectedly. My mum was taken to the hospital on the 24th of January this year and she was diagnosed with COVID-19.
Right.
And less than a week later, she was given 3 days to live. We got a phone call to say on a Friday, ring your mum, you won't get to speak to her again. She's 3 days to live. Yes. So we had to ring my mum on the Friday.
Mm-hmm.
She was in the Mater Hospital. I was talking to her while she was wearing a heavy mask.
Yeah.
I could hear the oxygen flying into her, trying to save her into her lungs. And the worst thing was I had to ring my dad, who was at home, isolating, to say that mum is very ill, she's 3 days to live. Unfortunately, Joe, my dad was taken into the same hospital the following week.
Mm-hmm.
And my mum didn't know my dad was in hospital. She was ringing him. He wasn't answering the phone. And she says, where's your dad? So I had to tell her he was taken into the same hospital. Shortly after my dad passed away, my mum was by his bedside for the first time in 2 weeks on the Thursday. She got to see him again on the Friday before he passed. And she had to watch his funeral from her hospital bed with 10 people at the funeral. Now, my mum, Joe, has oxygen in the house. She's tanks of oxygen in the house. She's highly dependent on oxygen because of COVID. She was in hospital for a number of months recovering from COVID. We had to live her when she came out of hospital because, you know, they had to make sure she was safe in the house. And people really aren't seeing the reality of what COVID is doing to the world, not only Ireland. Over 4 million deaths. We now have over 5,300 deaths, Joe. We have 10,000 confirmed cases in a very short period of time. People are losing sight of things that they just can't see. And the guidance is very simple. Wash your hands, keep your distance, and wear the mask. It's a very
And get vaccinated. This is a pandemic. This is not an individual illness that does not affect anyone else. This is a pandemic.
Joe, this affects... My wife, Fiona Gray, is Assistant Director of Nursing in St. James's Hospital.
Mm.
And when the pandemic started, I had to stay out of work for months in case she brought something home to me and I brought her into work, or in case I caught something in work and I gave it to her and she brought it into the hospital. She had to get undressed in the hall, coming home many mornings and many nights from work, put her clothes straight into a special wash in the machine, and keep away from our daughters for days with the risk of infecting people. She's on nights now. She's in bed after working in St. James's with all the wonderful, colleagues that they have. And what's happening now is that she is seeing the complacency. She is seeing the numbers going up.
Yeah.
She is seeing people being unable to come into hospital to sit with their loved ones, and in the worst situation, to say goodbye to their loved ones. Because all we're doing is saying a virtual goodbye. For people to stand, Joe, in a hospital, in the Mater Hospital, where they say to you, you can go into your dad wearing all this equipment, you cannot spend more than 15 minutes in there, you've not to touch him, you've not to hug him, you've not to hold him, you've not to take anything out of your pockets in the room, and you've not to remove anything from the room. And then to be told your dad is dead over the phone, we're going to put him into a coffin, we're going to seal the coffin, and you're never going to see, touch him or hug him again. This is the reality of where we are. And people just don't get it, Joe. This is the reality of where we are, and people just don't get it. Unfortunately, the masks are slipping.
Mm.
People aren't paying attention to what should be done. And
now you asked, I don't know if you're going to a pub or a restaurant, are you asked for your vaccine cert?
I have been asked my vaccine cert, yes, Joe. I have, in fairness now. I don't go to pubs or restaurants. I've been in two. I've been one at a funeral where I had to give the vaccine cert. And one is a coffee shop near where I work. I work in the Criminal Courts of Justice, and there's a small coffee shop along Parkgate Street there, and they seek your vaccine certificate when you go in. So that end of it is good. And I only go there because they're going to ask me for the vaccine cert if I go in for a coffee. But people are just letting their guard down, Joe. You have to get vaccinated if you can get vaccinated. My mum got vaccinated when she was in hospital to protect her against COVID from getting it again.
Yeah.
If my dad could have hanging on just for a couple of months later, he may have been lucky enough to get the vaccine. And he may have been lucky enough to be with us here to maybe talk to you on the show, you know?
Yeah. Do you think the vaccination battle for the last 10% has been lost?
I think it's losing traction, Joe. I think people have to get vaccinated. They have to realise how dangerous this thing is to everybody. Because not only does it destroy lives, it destroys the community, Joe. We need to remember our most vulnerable in the community, because they can't go to the shops even if they're vaccinated. They're not able to do it. They're trying to recover from COVID or other things. But the government has to push the message. We need everybody to get vaccinated. It's the only life preserver that we have at the moment. It's either that or we all get locked away like we did last Christmas. Well, we didn't get locked away last Christmas. They shouldn't have opened up last Christmas, is my view. It was my dad would probably still be here if they didn't open up last Christmas. But the government have a tough decision now. Are we going to let this continue? Or will we have to shut the country down? The safest thing for everybody is to get vaccinated, if you can. If you can, get vaccinated. Not because you don't want to. If you can, get vaccinated.
John is on the line. Say there, Darren. John, good afternoon.
How are you doing?
You say you went for a couple of pints last Friday. What happened? Were you checked?
Yeah, well, look, I went in the door and I had to sign a sheet, but I was asked to be vaccine cert. And I was just watching, it wasn't far from the front door, and like, people coming in, and neither were they.
Mm-hmm.
And then I noticed as the dawn started getting a bit warm, and I says, cheers, I wonder, is the ventilation
okay?
Okay. So that was what occurred to me. Now, I have been in, you know, yourself, you know, like a pint on Friday night or something in Florida, so I wouldn't be going to any particular pub in any particular evening, but I have been, say, out for a pint, and got completely different where they checked your cert, keep it on your phone. It's very handy. I was down in Waterford there. Steph and the wife went down and was at a restaurant, and there was a senior gentleman. I mean, I'm in my 60s, but this man was a bit older even. He was at the door.
Mm-hmm.
And he checked my cert, and I said to him, thanks very much. And he thought I was being sarcastic. But we were away for 4 days, and I was only in Waterford one of those days. I was down the southeast, and anywhere we went, we actually weren't checked, and that was around the 3rd week of August.
They weren't checked. And what do you think should happen tomorrow week, the Bank Holiday Friday? That's when everything is gone, apart from masks and health centres and buses, transport.
But unless my cert is going to be checked, I won't be going in anywhere anyway.
But it's,
so what I suggest is...
But how can you be assured then that the people who've gone in ahead of you haven't been checked?
Well, I mean, if they're going to check you, the chances are that they'll check everybody. But they don't check
So you're saying if they don't check me, I'm not going in there? Because that means they haven't checked anyone else. Good point, yeah.
But I think if everybody went, used that as your yardstick, there is a chance, you know. I mean, it's okay when you're going to the same pub and people know you and, you know, the barman, and he's checked your shirt and everything is fine. When you're walking into a pub for the first time and you're not checked, then you can't be comfortable about that pub.
Yeah.
Doesn't make logic sense. Especially
so what do you think should happen tomorrow week?
I think the public will decide. We'll see if the rates come down. If pubs or restaurants aren't checking your cert, do yourself and your family a favour.
But from tomorrow week, they won't have to check your cert.
No, we don't know that yet. This keeps going.
No, that's why I know that, but I know it might change between. But as of now, so to speak, the decision is from October 22. You can go into a restaurant pub unchecked, unvaccinated. You can, no, the masks aren't required
anyway. If you're asking me what's the decision they should make now, I reckon they should cancel it for 1 week.
Yeah.
So for 1 week to see where the figures are going, if you have to make a decision.
Who's that, Darren, coming in there?
I agree, Joe. They have to delay opening up the country fully. It's a very good point, but the personal responsibility is gone. We cannot have cases coming up to nearly 10,000, like in the recent days and recent weeks, and say to everybody, it's all down to personal responsibility. We've seen a match in Croke Park, and it's a wonderful venue. And there were two members of government in Croke Park, while many people weren't wearing their masks. So if two government ministers can't see a mass gathering of people of 40,000 not complying with what's recommended by our health professionals, but then how do they know that everybody else, or how can they even comprehend that everybody else is doing the same thing? The personal responsibility, Joe, we are just not, at the moment, not everybody, but as a whole nation, we're just not confident enough to be personally responsible.
Yeah, but the whole portrayal in the last 7 days, especially around Callum Robinson, is, it's a personal choice. This is the argument. It's his personal choice.
Well, Joe, look, it is maybe somebody's personal choice. There may be many reasons why people can't get vaccinated. But if you don't want to get vaccinated just because it's a personal choice, go into St. James's Hospital. Mm. Go into the Mater Hospital.
I remember, they would say, well, it's nothing to do with me, but it is a pandemic. It is a pandemic.
It is a pandemic, yeah. Joe, okay. And this is the whole thing. Because to actually be told, you know, you can't hug, touch, or greet your parent who's dying. I mean, how worse can it get? It just can't get any worse than that. People will be looking back at 50 years' time, maybe 100 years' time, saying, why didn't everybody do what they were recommended to do? This vaccine will save your life. It may not prevent you from getting sick, but it will prevent you from going to hospital, hopefully. And if you do end up in hospital, on a ventilator. We have a health service which is under pressure anyway, long before COVID, and now it has to cope with this. So we can have a personal choice of not getting the vaccine. But it's the same person going to personally choose not to go to hospital when they become very sick.
Okay, Liz Crummy, stay there. Liz Crummy, good afternoon. You were at the
good afternoon, Joe.
You were in a full theatre last night.
I was in a full theatre last night. COVID cert was checked on the way in, scammed.
Okay.
But no ID was checked against us.
Oh,
so
I understand, yeah.
I could have been showing anybody's shirt. So then you went into the theatre and there was an announcement to say that everybody was to remain wearing masks unless they were eating or drinking. But sure, everybody was eating and drinking.
And was every seat occupied?
Every single seat was occupied.
I thought there was capacity restrictions still in force.
Yeah, well, if the capacity restrictions were in force, it meant that the upper circle or the upper place, but the area where I was sitting, the full area was not 1 square feet.
Everyone was sitting beside each other.
Everybody was sitting beside each other. So, like, the whole thing is that COVID cert has been swapped around amongst unvaccinated people. There's no double checking.
Oh, okay. Your point is, I can say to my pal, send me a screen grab of your vax cert.
Exactly. And it doesn't take rock and science.
And
to
I can
whack
that into my wallet on my phone. I can show it. But there's no way. The only way you can prove is say, can I see your driver's license or an ID with your photographic ID with your photograph
on it. When I go to my local community centre, I must show ID and show my COVID cert every time. Now, that's properly monitoring the situation.
Yeah. Okay, stay with us. 1850 715 815.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
The conversation today was led off by Tom Somerville arguing that the relaxation, that's the massive relaxation that's due to come in tomorrow week, the bank holiday Friday, is premature. And he told us of the death within a week of each other, of his beloved brother Patrick and Patrick's wife Esther, January 17th and January 24th, both of them from COVID. Aoife Hickey. Aoife, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe.
How are you? And I know you.
I'm okay, Joe. I'm very, very concerned. The public is not being informed with any real regularity by, for example, the experts in NPHET. A new committee has been established that sits between NPHET and the Cabinet. Of course, there are commercial considerations, the economy and all the rest of it. But the bottom line is that there's a minority, a 10% minority, who have chosen to or otherwise decided not to take the vaccine. Mm-hmm. Combine that with the relaxation restrictions and the drive to get people back to work, it's a recipe for disaster.
But
it's
a high risk
country.
But it is. It's not exclusively, but it's like in the States at the minute. It is a pandemic of the unvaccinated. They're the ones that are ending up in hospital.
And the real issue is, like that lady was pointing out about her night in the theatre, is that there's a certain cohort of our community that deny COVID, that argue nonsense about the science, that were actually seen to interfere with a gentleman's medical hospitalisation and medical treatment in Donegal. Mm-hmm. This poor gentleman went on to die. In my view, was a direct result.
Okay. That's...
And I'm sitting in my kitchen in my house out here in West Dublin. My father died in a hospital setting 24th of April 2020. Yeah. 6 weeks isolation. An elderly gentleman died alone, closed coffin. 10-person funeral, closed doors. Mm. There have been other deaths in the wider family. I'm vaccinated. I will take any other medication that's recommended. My brother lives in the village here near to me. He has 6 teenage children, 3 of whom are off sick from school with COVID. The bottom line is that it's either a matter of public health or it's not. And the whole idea of putting it onto the person, the individual responsibility, subhorns the consequences to the community as opposed to those that are elected and paid to govern us. I would like to see vaccine mandating and actual consequences so that if people don't choose to get vaccinated, then they don't have access to wider community services.
Well, that's as well. Well, at the moment, you don't have access. You won't get on a plane. You can't get on a plane.
I understand that. But as you say, not everybody's checked. Not all documentation is checked. There are anomalies.
Against ID.
Yes, there are anomalies between different national systems and indeed even international systems. I know of persons myself that flew internationally during the pandemic and did so by manipulating, I'll use that word, manipulating their information. Mm. Now, I can't get into it on a personal basis, but the consequences for the community are that people acquire this disease. They may not have any symptoms. They may be shedding the virus.
Yeah.
And even for those who are vaccinated, they may run the risk, even if it's a slight risk, of picking it up and passing it on. This This is the real problem. People's minds are not really focused. They've been distracted.
But distracted by what, Eva? By life?
Distracted by the pleas to go back to work, distracted by the constant messaging about the economy slowing down, distracted by the dreadful costs to our community of supporting us through this crisis. I mean, what are the choices? You leave people to starve at home on their own with no jobs and all the rest of it, and you let this thing run riot, as they attempted to do in the UK with so-called herd immunity. You know, we imported the Delta here in the run-up to last Christmas.
Yeah, but the Delta hasn't been as damaging as it was predicted.
That's right, you're absolutely correct. Because a significant number of people went and got the vaccine. But the problem is that there remains a pool of people who choose not to or otherwise don't take the vaccine, and the Delta variant continues to circulate, and it's extremely contagious and in some cases critically life-threatening. We now have elderly nursing home settings where people are coming and going for whatever reasons, maybe agency staff, people from abroad, God only knows, and they're bringing the virus in and the virus is circulating, and these were the people in the elderly homes that were vaccinated first. I mean, where's the payback? I mean, think about the cost of all this, providing a vaccine. If we're in a situation where there's a rump of the community that's not complying or not willing to undergo vaccination, then that devalues every vaccine that was taken because the risks are less mitigated.
Okay.
It's as simple as that. And, you know, we're all living through this. It's been life-changing. I'm living like a hermit. I don't want to live like this.
Yeah.
But I don't feel that for my own health.
So tomorrow week, no reopening or limited reopening?
If they go ahead with it, then they have to be very honest about the actual concomitant risks. And who is going to take the responsibility for that?
Looks like COVID's going to be with us for a long, long time.
It's not going away. Yeah, you're absolutely right. So therefore, every measure must be taken to mandate vaccination. And for those who don't or won't take vaccination, then there have to be real world consequences.
Well, in Washington, I know it varies from state to state, but in Washington, D.C., all federal workers must be vaccinated.
Yeah. Yeah.
All first responders, all healthcare workers in New Zealand, and that's mandatory as well.
I have relatives in the northeastern United States, and they work in education, they work in finance, they work in right across the spectrum, all the professions. They're mandated now. They simply cannot go to work unless they have proof of vaccination.
But are they penalised? Like, do they lose their pay?
If you don't go to work and you're otherwise available for work, but you don't meet the qualifying criteria, which is vaccination, no work, no wages. And it's not an economy that's based on a welfare model. There are actual real-world consequences.
Okay.
And that's why they put that break in there to say to people, you have an actual choice. Choose to get vaccinated, fine. We understand you're doing your best, and this is our best way of protecting the community from this, you know, fatal disease, highly contagious disease. And if you choose not to, well, then that's your choice. But then you choose not to go to work, and therefore you choose not to get paid. And as I say, it's not a welfare model. There's no fallback.
Absolutely, in the States, it isn't. Okay, Eva O'Hickey, condolences on the passing of Dr. Seamus, your father. And thanks for your
God.
God rest him indeed.
Thank you. You're doing a great job.
Maria King runs a small cafe. What's happening? What are you witnessing, Maria, in the last week or so?
Hiya, Joe. Well, we're witnessing certainly a lack of, you know, people coming in with no masks. Staff are getting abuse every other day, you know, about taking contact tracing. You know, like, why do you need my number? I'm not giving it to you. Giving numbers like 0871-2345. So we have turned so many people away. Now, I have to be honest. I mean, the majority of people are fine, but there's definitely an easing of things. You can see it. And it is very scary to think what will happen.
And do you check the vax cert when they come in? guests.
Absolutely. And again, Joe, we have turned so many people away because they don't have it. You know, it's at home safely or I don't have it. So, yes, we would. You know, I have said to the staff, the first thing we have to do here from the beginning of COVID is safety. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very unfair, you know, for staff to take abuse. I've actually, even last week, got a very abusive email in because we looked for ID and a cert.
And what did I don't want to quote the name, obviously, but what was the sting of that email?
Well, basically that they didn't have to give this and how dare we look for information and about data and just the whole thing, just the whole tone of it, that somebody bothered when they were asked to show what they should be showing. The fact that they take the time to send an abusive email about it. And we've also
Because you asked for ID to match the vax cert.
We would most times ask for ID. Yeah. Yeah, I know you don't have to maybe in every case, but we do most of the time. And if we're anyway suspicious, because if we let somebody in, they have COVID, we end up closing the business and the staff are out of work for 2 weeks. So that's the other thing, you know. But we've also had a lot of abuse from deliveries over the past year. Delivery drivers, an awful lot of hassle with it. And a lot of time has been taken up with it, where they are tearing in, they don't want to wear their masks, won't sanitise their hands, so we just say, no, you can't come in. And we've actually had our deliveries fired in through the front door on occasion. So, I mean, I think it's a bit of a mixed bunch.
So what about tomorrow week?
Tomorrow week? Yeah. I'd be very concerned about that, because
Do you think we should stick with vax cert and ID to match?
Absolutely. Yeah. Because if we don't, it means that we don't have any authority to ask anybody for anything. So we don't know who's coming in. So that opens up a whole other situation, which I would personally would be very unhappy with.
Okay, Maria. Thanks, Anita. It's Maria King. More people after the break. 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
It began with a call today from Tom Somerville about his death of his brother Patrick and Patrick's wife Esther within a week of each other back in January from COVID. And everything around it is horrific in terms of the ability to see people, in terms of how the couple even could not even be in contact, etc. It's horrific, and it is COVID. Dermot, the reopening tomorrow week, yes or no?
I have no problem with the reopening as such, because I realise businesses have been badly hit. But I think it should be restricted solely to people who have their vaccinations or have their certificates because they've recovered from COVID or whatever the regulations are. And the people who make their my choice, my body decision should suffer the consequences of that.
In what way?
Well, they should be restricted access. They can't go to the theatre, they can't go dining, they can't go live entertainments because they haven't got their chosen not to get their vaccinations.
Okay. And you know the allegations there, you'll get apartheid, you'll get all named. This is what you'd be accused of.
Apartheid works in two directions.
Yeah, but it's not apartheid. But anyway, I take your point.
Let's say discrimination works in two directions.
So you say
they are discriminating against me.
Because it is a pandemic and they can pass it on you. So you're basically saying no vax, no entry.
No vax, no entry.
Okay, Chris is on the line. Thanks, Darren, but your point, please, Chris.
Hi, Joe. First of all, thank you so much for highlighting this issue. People have become so complacent, I have noticed, over the last couple of weeks, not wearing the mask properly, no social distancing, and just a feeling that it's all gone away, let's get on with it. But, you know, we can't just get on with it. We still have to take precautions. And if your programme does one thing today, it just might save lives.
And, Chris, where are you seeing carelessness or our guards?
Well, I was in a supermarket 2 days ago, and there was a gentleman stacking shelves, no mask. Went around the corner, met another two staff members, one with a mask, one without, chatting away, walking up the aisle. I mean, I've been standing in queues at supermarkets and I've felt breath on my neck and I've turned around, there's somebody right behind me. I've had to put my hand out so often and ask them very politely to move, just step back. And they have looked at me like I've just come down from another planet.
Yeah.
I just don't understand it. Why, you know, and people walking around with masks under their chins and the nose exposed. I'm seeing that all the time.
Yeah.
And another
from tomorrow week, with some exceptions, public transport and health shops and centres, no one will have to wear a mask indoors or outdoors.
I think it's absolutely crazy. I mean, if everyone had their booster, I'd say, well, maybe. But, you know, the booster shots have not been rolled out for the rest of the population. I think they've started in the nursing homes.
And the over 80s, yeah.
Yes. But for those of a certain age, Joe, who, say, between 60 and 70, they were given the AstraZeneca. And we have been told now that that was the least efficacious. And for the people who got it first, say those in the late 60s, their 6 months is coming up to an end. And if the government doesn't roll out the booster soon, I think we're going to be in real trouble.
And do you think the previous caller, Dermot, had a line there, there should be no vax, no entry?
I absolutely agree with him. I concur. Okay. Obviously there are people who can't be vaccinated for health reasons. But, I mean, they would be in the minority.
To compare it with
an illness, you just can't compare a plague with, say, something else. I mean, I couldn't give you cancer or vice versa, but I could give you COVID.
Exactly. And give a lot of people COVID as well.
A lot of people, vulnerable people COVID. I mean, young and old, this is affecting everybody. I've lost two friends, not in this country, in other countries. And yes, they were elderly, but they didn't deserve to die of COVID.
Absolutely.
No one deserves to die of COVID. I mean, if we all just took a little extra care and looked out for each other, we just might get through this.
But as Anna Connor pointed out this morning on Morning Ireland, the majority now of people who are infections are basically under 44. 66% of those who are who have got COVID are under 44. The majority of patients admitted to hospital and ICU are not vaccinated. 10% of the population who are not vaccinated are driving 50% of admissions.
Isn't that shameful? Our health workers have done such a wonderful job. And I can't imagine how they feel when they hear these statistics. And they're working 24/7 to keep people alive. And I just don't understand, Joe.
Okay.
I really don't.
Okay, Chris, stay safe. Thanks indeed, Deborah.
Okay,
Deborah, good
Joe.
Afternoon. Should we reopen tomorrow week?
No. As previous callers said, I do agree. No vaccination, no entry. No mask, no entry. We were in the west of Ireland at the weekend, and we comments made because we were wearing a mask going to the bathroom. It was a bar restaurant, so we were having food.
Mm-hmm.
And when we finished our food, we just got up and left. It was absolutely hopping. Nobody really doing social distancing or any mask wearing. And as they are going through to the bathroom and people are going, oh, mask coming through. You know,
wow.
I just couldn't get over.
Sanitizers?
There was sanitizers there, didn't see a lot of people using them. Again, in the bathroom, there was people going to the bathroom in with you, no masks on. You know, I work for a food company, so I'm on the road. Supermarkets, customers are coming in front of you, not hand sanitizing. It was never here. You know, I lost my mum last year, but it wasn't through COVID. But she died on her own. We weren't allowed to go into hospice to her. You know, I think it's a case of if it doesn't affect you, it's not happening. If it hasn't come into your family, it's not happening. You know, and people need to cop on. You know, they really do.
Deborah, what about Dermot's point? No vax, no entry.
Yeah, I agree with that. definitely. I mean, for those of us that have got vaccinated, you know, our children have got vaccinated that were at the age, like, why should we, you know, what's the word I want to use? Like, it's kind of like, oh, well, it is your right not to get vaccinated, but, you know, look at the bigger picture. We need to keep everybody safe. It's not going to prevent you from catching this disease, but it will prevent you from dying, you know, unless you have an underlying
good
condition,
point,
like, you know. And I just, as I say, people just need to kind of go, okay, our family have, if they've kept their family safe, brilliant. But for those of us that have lost somebody through it, you know, just have a bit of sympathy, have a bit of cop on, and wash your hands, wear your mask, and just keep your distance. You know, no one is saying for
and get vaccinated.
But definitely, if you're going out, you know, we stood waiting to be seated and had our COVID cert on our phone, but nobody checked them, nobody scanned them.
And the worry there is, did they scan anyone else?
Well, this is it.
You know you're vaccinated.
So, yeah. So we had our bit of dinner and we left because we just all, and there was 8 of us and none of us felt comfortable. We just went, no, let's just get out of here, you know?
Okay. Thanks, Deborah. Appreciate
thanks,
it. Stefan De Beer is in Kerry. Sorry for holding you there, Stefan. Your situation.
My wife left last year in February for a wedding in South Africa.
Okay.
And soon thereafter, the world locked down, and she was never able to come back. South Africa just refused all planes. So did Europe from Africa, especially with this new virus that broke out in South Africa at the time. So, you know, there was just no way for her to come back. And she still hasn't come back. I'm going home to her now on the 27th of October, and it'll be the first time I see her since last year, February.
And you've counted the days?
638 will be the number when I first hold her in South Africa.
And the debate today is, should we fully reopen tomorrow week, Bank Holiday Friday?
Yes, we should, under two conditions.
Okay.
The one is that vaccination must be proved wherever you go. And secondly, masks must remain mandatory.
Okay, so no vax, no entry.
No vax, no entry. And, you know, and I think really and truly, the government and the police and everybody sends in undercover people to see if youngsters buy cigarettes or alcohol. They should do exactly the same in this country. Send in undercover people to see if they get into a restaurant without having to show their pass, and if they do, that place should be shut down. It's as easy as that.
Okay. So you'll get to see your wife on the 27th of October. When you're talking to her in South Africa, what is the situation there, Stefan?
At this present moment, they're not having as many infections as what Ireland has. They're actually a lot below Ireland.
Already?
But the death rate is fairly high. We've lost a lot of friends of our own personal close friends to COVID, and she told me this week that they are now studying a possible link of type 1 diabetes between COVID and after having COVID and attracting type 1 diabetes in South Africa. It seems to be more and more people have once they healed, they pick up type 1 diabetes, but that's not proven yet. It is a possible side effect.
Okay. Stefan De Beer, safe travelling, Stefan. I'm glad you'll be able to see your partner again after 638 days. Thanks, Stefan,
and
safe travelling.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And Joe at rt.ie. Back to the debate and the fascinating way it went yesterday, led by the first caller. It was about free contraceptives for the 18 to 25-year-olds, young women. And basically the tenor of the show was, should have happened years ago and it should be extended. And also people were telling us they're in some cases quite totally true, but unbelievable in the sense of, you say, my God, did this happen in our lifetimes? But it did. About, what was one woman, medically she had to go on the pill. Her GP said he wouldn't prescribe the pill to save her life unless she got a letter from her priest, and priest insisted on getting a letter from the Archbishop, or seeking a letter. He eventually got one, and that's when the GP agreed to prescribe the pill once she had a letter in her back pocket from John Charles McQuaid, so to speak. Now, John, good afternoon.
Joe, how are you?
As we know, condoms in Ireland have a very, very, very bizarre history, available throughout the world for 60 years ago, but not available here until 1980. But you were wholesaling and selling them.
Yeah, look at Joe, my poor mum. She's still alive. I hope she doesn't recognise the voice on the phone because she was a staunch Catholic.
Yeah.
So I get hammered for this. Right. Now, Joe, I had a head injury so a couple of years ago. So, like, my recollection, I do have to write down everything, right? So, a few notes, but just in case you ask me anything. And look, I was born around the early 50s, right? So, that'll give you an idea of my age. I'm 60, I'm over 60, so I'm well past retirement age, pension age, right? So, back then, back in the 70s, I remember it's all concerned the Bullwalker, believe it or not. There was a Bullwalker on the magazine at the time, and I decided to get it because I was about 9-10 stone weight, 6 foot. I wanted to try and build these muscles that was promised with this Bullwalker. So I got the Bullwalker anyway from England, and I realised you could sell a postal order for us. So we sent off a postal order for Bullwalker, right? You paid for by installments.
Okay, postal order.
So that's a precursor to what I'm going to tell you, right? So this guy arrives home from England with Playboy magazine, one of the lads. Brothers in England, arrived home for a Playboy magazine. The Playboy magazine done all the rounds of us teenagers as it did at the time. And on the Playboy magazine was an ad for condoms.
Okay.
Right? So we said to the other guy, decided, God, you know something now? We could send for those condoms to England. So the innocence of it at the time was, we sent the postal order to England and went back on the plain brown envelope to my sister's house. And the only sister I have, she murdered me, a padded envelope with an amount of condoms. You know, there was an awful lot more condoms than we were expecting in it.
Okay.
Right. So some of that we started to sell it to our friends.
Okay.
Right. So we realised we could make money on these condoms, right, in a serious way. So over a couple, 3 or 4 weeks anyway, maybe a couple of months, we were sending things and getting this plain package back to my sister, so she had no clue what she was getting, and I was going up and picking it up. So the demand got a bit bigger and bigger and bigger. So then we decided, right, we got a friend of ours and we went to Newry. And we're bringing down the condoms from Newry and England at the same time.
And did you have a network of sellers?
No. What basically happened was, Joe, we were selling them on site. My friend was working on site. We were selling them on site and I was selling them around the pubs at the weekend. Right?
Yeah.
So over Friday evening, we used to have what was called the condom run, or the rubber run, now not being naughty or anything like that, right? So we had the rubber run of a Friday evening, and it was getting out of hand because we had an awful lot of money, right?
Yes.
And we were two apprentices now, so you can imagine the apprenticeship wages at the time. And we were making 3 or 4 times our apprenticeship wages on these rubbers, as we called them at the time.
And
right?
your rubber run on a Friday would be what, around pubs in Dublin?
No, we were out from a rural town.
Okay.
So I was from rural Ireland, we say. I was from a rural town, not too far from Dublin. You only remember the ad, an hour from Dublin?
Yeah.
So, give you an idea where I was from, right? I'm a Meadman, right? So we were doing the rubber run anyway, and the other guy was doing, he used to bring the rubbers off a Friday evening to Dublin with him, a Friday morning to Dublin with him, and he'd sell them on the safe and the lads would get paid. That time everybody got paid in cash or whatever, and all the rubbers would be sold on a Friday in Dublin. And then they got out of hand, right? So then, I ended up going out with a girl from Dublin, and she brought me down to Dandelion Market, right?
The Dandelion Market, there you go.
And it was my first visit to Dandelion Market, right? I didn't even know it existed. I'd been from rural Ireland. It was amazing to see it.
Okay,
right?
What you do down there?
We met a guy, and he took the rubbers off us.
Okay.
So we were supplying him then wholesale with rubbers.
I remember, they were illegal in Ireland up to 1979. You could get them on a prescription, but they must have had You must have had bona fide family planning reasons. In other words, as we heard yesterday, people were asked to bring in their marital cert if they wanted to get a prescription to buy a packet of condoms. Unbelievable stuff. Unbelievable. And did you become a millionaire because of this, John? Are you?
No, I didn't. So, look, we were young at the time and we were the best at club. We were buying Ben Sherman shorts. And, you know, remember the Ben Sherman shorts?
And the Wrangler jeans, yeah. Yeah, of course.
We're getting our hair done every week, so we're going to the TV club and the Ace of Spades.
And were you ever caught? Was the post ever interfered with?
No, because it was coming in a plain package at the time. It was coming in the padded envelope, my sister's, right?
Yeah.
But then we started going to Newry for them, right, which was better again. But we had all this money, we didn't know what to do with it, right? So we bought a second-hand car, right?
Mm-hmm.
So after buying the second-hand car, we couldn't drive because we weren't legal age. So we got a guy who was palling around with us, who was working for the P&T at the time. They automatically got a licence. They'd done so he got his licence with the P&T. So the licence, the car was registered to him, insured to him, and we used to use the car the weekends to go dancing and carousing around the place. And we used to sell the rubbers over that. We used to sell the condoms over that as well.
Okay. Well, you were doing it when they were... Well, believe it or not, they were illegal. Okay, John, thanks indeed. Anne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John.
How are you? No, you're fine. Tell us your story. First of all, will you tell us the contraceptive story and what happened when you asked?
Okay.
The priest was involved again.
Oh, yeah. I was in hospital giving birth to a stillborn baby.
Right.
And I knew he was going to be born, stillborn. And I was quite religious at the time, and I asked for a priest to hear my confession.
Yeah.
And that was okay. And I told the priest, the doctors had warned me not to have more children, that it was a dangerous risk to my health. And my life even, they went as far as saying. So I asked the priest, could I go on contraceptives? And he told me, now a lovely priest, I will say, wasn't his fault. He told me, he said, I couldn't because it would go against my religion and I couldn't practice as a Catholic. I had the gynecologist warning me not to have any more children.
Yeah,
I said, I can't go against my religion. At the time, it was very important to me. Now, this is only about 35 years ago. Not very long time ago. But anyway, I didn't go on it and I risked my health a lot and I lost a lot more babies. Now, I did go on to have more babies, thankfully, but I did lose a lot as well.
But what was the priest saying to you, Anne, that you'd have to denounce your religion, you'd have to leave the Catholic Church?
No, he said I couldn't be a Catholic if I went on contraceptives.
Yeah.
I couldn't practice it. Yeah, I'd have to denounce it. And I couldn't. I'd be honest with you. I didn't want to do that at the time.
Okay. And do you know why? When you look back on it?
Well, they said it was against the Catholic.
No, do you know why you weren't prepared to?
Well, I was religious at the time.
Okay.
I believed I was a staunch Catholic.
Okay.
And I didn't want to go against my religion.
Did you want confession?
Oh, yeah. I wanted absolution to say it was okay to go on the contraceptive pill.
Yeah.
Due to health reasons. There were really genuine health reasons. Like a gynecologist warning me I could die if I kept having children. And that I lost so many children and I had to have a lot of operations myself because of going on to have so many children, but I wouldn't go under. I did now in the latter years,
but for
a long time I didn't.
And then the birth of your stillborn baby, that must have been very traumatic.
That was horrific. I remember a nurse singing. I still can hear that. She was actually singing and she attended to me and I gave him birth.
Did she know?
I don't know.
She knew.
I don't know. I said to her, please don't sing. I remember saying that because I was so upset. It was tough. Yeah, it was.
And did she stop singing?
No.
And did she know? Did she know she was delivering a stillborn baby?
Oh, yeah. I didn't know in that. They all knew that, doctors, nurses and all. And I asked her what would happen to baby, and she said the baby would be sent off in a stranger's coffin, in the bottom of a stranger's coffin. And I got really upset, and she told me to, you know, as much as to cop on, and that's the way it was done.
Your baby would be interred.
In a stranger's coffin, in the end of it.
So your baby would go to the morgue or the mortuary in the hospital.
Yeah.
And would be randomly placed, if someone else died that day or whatever.
Yeah.
Would be randomly placed at the foot of that inside.
Yeah, she said that's the way it was done in them days. And I said, no, I didn't want that to happen. I never heard
that before.
Yeah, I know. And I got really upset and I said to her, I don't want that to happen. You wouldn't
know where your baby was buried?
No. She said that was the norm at the time.
And then the person, obviously an older person who was in the coffin.
You wouldn't know them.
But their family wouldn't know there's two people in the coffin.
Yeah, I don't know that part. Probably they wouldn't. But she said that's the way it was done then. But thankfully, I got very upset over it, and I talked to my gynecologist. I was lucky enough I could have a gynecologist. He said, no, don't. He told me it was okay. So we actually had a little funeral at night time ourselves. In our own home graveyard. But it was horrific them times. You couldn't have people at the funeral. It had to be done in secret. All due to the religion.
But you were a member of a religious order at one stage. Is that true?
Yeah, I'm not now.
But them days I was.
Did the priest know
you were an ex-nun? Did that make a difference?
I forgot to mention that. He did know that. Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
And that's why my religion was really important to me that
day.
I mean to say now I'm not religious in any shape or form.
Okay. And I take your point, it's not that long ago.
It's not that long ago at all.
Okay.
Like, it was cruel what women had to go through.
Absolutely. Okay, Anne, stay safe. Thanks indeed, Anne.
Yeah. Thank you.
Kind regards. That's Anne. Louise, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Joe.
We're just remembering people, and we had Margaret on yesterday, who was 70. She was a campaigner, a pioneer, so to speak, in the family planning movement in Cork and still fighting for women's rights. It's your father, Dr. Greg Little.
Yeah. Yes, yes. He set up the family planning clinic in Galway with his childhood friend, Eamon McHale, in the late 70s.
And what reaction did he get?
Well, I suppose I would have been quite young at the time. I don't really remember, but I do know from stories and stuff that it was pretty frowned upon, and, it wasn't encouraged. At all.
Yeah, I just said, and I presume they couldn't have a prominent shop to sell condoms in. I presume it was.
No, from what I know, there was kind of an old office or dingy office that was set up for people who wanted to have contraception, mainly the family, the morning after pill and condoms and stuff like that. And they persevered and they just persevered and stuck with their goals and set up the family planning clinic and subsequently then set up STD clinic in Galway as well.
Against great pressure, great public and political and
religious
pressure. Yeah. And your dad died when, Louise, when did Greg die?
He died 8 weeks ago.
Oh, God. I'm sorry to hear that. Okay, and remember, I'm just trying to remember all the pioneers. Obviously, I remember our own Marion Finucane, Niall O'Faylon, the great Nell, who thankfully is still with us, Nell McCafferty. I'm also thinking of Tony O'Brien. When I was a student, he set up the subsequently CEO of the HSE. He set up a family planning clinic in Cattle Brewer Street, Dr. Andrew Ryan, the list goes on. But they were ploughing a lonely furrow and a very difficult furrow at that stage. They really were, but they did it. And as the reaction yesterday from especially older women saying, if only this happened 30, 40 years ago, instead of us having to furtively and a lot of times unsuccessfully get basic contraception, it would have made a difference. Okay, Louise, kind regards and remembering Dr. Greg Little and remembering Dr. Just reminding us of the role Dr. Eimear MacHale played as well. Thanks indeed, Louise. Back after this.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And where we began was the phone call from Tom Somerville about his brother Patrick and his wife Elsie, who died within a week of each other this year from COVID. Pam Somerville is the niece of Tom Somerville. That means, Pam, Patrick and Elsie were your parents?
That's correct, yeah.
So you've gone through a very difficult time. Can I begin where I began with Tom? What do you think of the restrictions being lifted tomorrow week, the bank holiday Friday?
Honestly, no, I just think it's crazy. It's just too soon. I agree, people have just become too complacent. And, you know, because the numbers aren't being mentioned of, you know, the death toll every day, people are just thinking that this is going away, and it's not going away. It's here to stay.
And, like, you were orphaned within a week this year.
Yep, I was.
And were your parents in two different hospitals?
They were. My mum was in Tallaght Hospital and my dad was in Blanchardstown Hospital. It happened like that because my mum went in first and then I took my dad up to stay with me here in Lucan and he became unwell. So when I called an ambulance for him, he had to go to Blanchardstown because of where we were, the encampment area. So, you know, he didn't get to say goodbye to my mum. She didn't get to say goodbye to him. And my sister was stuck in Australia. She could not come home to see them. She had to say goodbye on FaceTime and watched a double funeral on FaceTime from Australia.
Good God.
You know, it doesn't get more real than that.
And were you allowed in to see them? Were you shuttling between hospitals?
I was, yeah. I was shuffling between Tallaght and Blanchardstown to see both my parents. I didn't think my dad was going to die. I thought it was my mum. I knew my mum. There was no more they could do for her, but I really did not think my dad was going to die. So it was a huge shock. And he went first in the end, and mum went in first. She was asymptomatic, but my dad was very, very sick. He was very sick with COVID, and you know, to go onto a COVID ward, to see that, to see what the nurses and doctors do and how sick patients really are, is a real eye-opener, and it would make people think twice maybe about getting vaccinated. I know some can't get vaccinated, but if you can, you should. Because we're going to have to live with COVID, but we're going to have to live with it safely. And living with it safely means getting vaccinated so that you're not hospitalised and you don't end up down the same road as my parents dead.
And Pam, did you know, because your uncle Tom told us that his brother, your dad, said to him on Christmas Day.
He did.
He told his brother that Elsie, my wife, was in hospital with COVID.
Yeah.
But if she goes, I don't want to be long behind her. And as it happened,
Did not want to live without my mum. He did not want to live without my mum. And he just said, if anything ever happens to her, I just can't live without her. That's just the way he was. And I think deep down, he probably knew she wasn't going to come out this time. And not that he gave up, but he was so sick. He was so tired and he was so sick. He probably just gave up in the end.
And did you know that your parents were about to die so close
to each other? I knew my mum was going to pass. Mum lasted 4 weeks in Tallaght Hospital. She came through her COVID, but because it had done damage to her lungs, there was just no more that they could do for her. She was going to have no quality of life. Yeah. My dad went very quickly. I saw my dad on the Friday and my dad was dead within 36 hours of me seeing him on the Friday. Yeah.
And I presume that the funerals were again under restrictions.
Yes, so it was a joint funeral for both my parents.
Was it? Oh, okay.
Still only 10 people allowed, regardless. And we were only allowed in the church. You know, we managed it. We had who we needed there and who we wanted there. So
And I can't even that image of you if it was in a church sitting there looking not at one but two coffins and they're your parents.
Yeah. Yeah, both of them together side by side.
Same illness, COVID took them in the end.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a very difficult one, Pam. It really is. It really is. What about the argument earlier on that it should be the no vax, no entry should continue?
I think it has to go like that for going forward. It's just, it's crazy to let them vaccinated in. That's their choice. I understand some people can't get vaccinated, and that's absolutely fine. But if you can, you should. We're protecting each other. It's about protecting each other. And, you know, I just can't see it working out. I'm certainly going nowhere when it opens up to unvaccinated. I don't want to be in a bar or a restaurant where they are. I think it's crazy. I think it's absolutely crazy. Okay. The numbers are on the up. I think I can see us heading for another lockdown of some sort.
Okay. Well, Pam, condolences on the death of your mum and dad. Patrick and Elsie, and may they rest in peace, safe in the arms of Our Lady, Queen of Heaven. And Pam, you look after yourself, and thanks for sharing that with us today, because you're sharing it, as Tom did, as a warning. Thanks indeed, Pam Somerville.
Thanks, Liam.
Today's program was produced by Annette Egan, Richie Byrne, research, Liam Mullen on sound, and Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Coming soon, the all-new Sportage. For more, log on to kia.com.
1850-715-815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.